And welcome back to the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. Very excited today to have Mike Stone, Stoney from 97.1 The Ticket, joining us to talk about his great career in media in this town, radio, television, radio again, and also to talk some sports because we've got a Michigan National Championship in the books. We have a Detroit Lions team that has won a division title and a playoff game for the first time in forever. And Stoney is here to talk about all of that. Welcome. Great to see you. Thanks for the opportunity to reflect and bask in the glory of the Lions.
It's so unusual. First of all, it's great to see you. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, they won a playoff game. It was at home. You know, when's the earth falling off? I don't know. Maybe if they get to the Super Bowl. But it's great to be a Detroit sports fan right now for certain things. Look, if you're a Michigan State fan, you don't like the fact that, you know, Michigan's national championship. But the Lions are good. The other teams still have a ways to go.
Yeah,
but at least whoever thought that our saving grace would be the Detroit freaking Lions.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Long-suffering Lions fans enjoying this, and not just one playoff game, but a victory, and now a second home game coming up on Sunday against the Buccaneers. And you know what? They can win that one too.
They're 6-point favorites. Now, Tampa, I think, is better than people give them credit for. I think the Lions should win because they're at home. Tampa has a really good defense. But you never know if they win, and maybe even Green Bay upsets San Francisco, and you'll be playing for the NFC Championship game at Ford Field. If not, we'll take it, go to San Francisco, and see if they could steal a trip to the, yeah, I said Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Would that be a way to end your time at 97.1 The Ticket
as
well?
Yeah, that's kind of what was planned, because in Philly, there was a guy named Angelo Cataldi at WIP in Philadelphia, and he announced his retirement and said, I'm going to do it up until when the Eagles season ends. And they ended up going to the Super Bowl. And they didn't win it, but, you know, that's what happened. So the brain trust at our place said, well, you know, at least hang on till this. Okay, sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever.
Well, and who knows? I mean, as it is, it's been something that with this regime finally in place, there has been progression, seemingly vision, and now results on the field. And, I mean, you got to look at, you know, the Matt Stafford trade, what they got from that, the smart draft choices, the impact that those draft choices have made immediately to improve this football team.
It's amazing. There's only a few people left from when Dan Campbell and Brad Holmes took over. I think Decker, Ragnow, Tracy Walker, and I think, what, Glasgow coming back.
Yeah.
I think that's it. There might be one other person. And the job that they've done and built this team and changed this culture, it's unbelievable. And look, we always say when we used to criticize him, it starts at the top. Well, it starts at the top, and William Clay Ford's, you know, daughter,
yeah,
Sheila, has done an amazing job. Getting Chris Spielman involved was the right thing. And the organization, it used to always be, David, you know, we go to the Silver Dome, and this person would talk, and this person, there was always like so many chefs in the kitchen. Everybody thought they were, now they're like joined at the hip, the whole organization, from the ownership to the janitors. I know it's cliche, but it's true.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, this is the way it's supposed to
be.
Yes! How has it not been this way ever to this point?
Because they always hired the wrong person to run football.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Well, and we've gone from the time where we worked together on Channel 7 on the Sports Update show. I mean, one in particular, you know, wearing a bag. Like some of like some of the fans did, because it was like so bad. It was like unbelievably bad.
I know, it was ridiculous. I mean, even before I started working with you, I mean, I moved here in 86 from Washington, where they covered the NFL like it should be covered, because the Redskins were usually good.
Yeah.
And I come here and you have Darryl Rogers looking at the roof of the Silver Dome wanting to be fired. It was like Eric Hipple, Gary Danielson, great guys. It just, nothing ever got done right. And then they get Barry. And they still couldn't get it. They had a few really good teams.
Yeah.
They did. But it
and
was never
some unfortunate injuries that really impacted things.
Yeah. The year after they went to the NFC Championship game, you know, you had Utley during the season. And then you had Eric Andelsek. Right. I mean, these things, you know, we talk about the Lions curse. There are things that have happened in this organization that would never happen to anyone else.
Yeah, yeah. And so finally, after all these years to get to this point, you know, this point with this team and with this franchise, I mean, I'm happy for all of us,
yeah,
as long-suffering Lions fans that, you know, whether you're in the stands or whether you're sitting at home watching like on Sunday night, and it's like, that's my team.
They are America's team. F the Cowboys. Because whether it started on Hard Knocks, people really across the country, and I'm not making this up, my friends who could care less, you know, they're either Philly fans, New York fans, guys I went to school with, they love Dan Campbell, they love the Hard Knocks, and they love the underdog story of, you know, this team that, because for years you tell people, yeah, they've won one playoff game since 1957.
Yeah.
I was born in 58, and I obviously wasn't here for all. It's like, really? Mm. Yes, that's true. It's amazing. It was the greatest stat in sports,
yeah,
and now it's over.
And there is an authenticity, certainly with Campbell, but with this team.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there is an identity. You know, they know who they are. They play to that. And in the locker room, we're going to show a clip. You know, that played itself out as well. You know, Dan Campbell obviously excited, talking to his team, but also the fact that, you know, Jared Goff, who came here out of, the Stafford trade, and, you know, hey, you're not good enough in L.A., well, you know, boy, he's been great here.
Yeah, and when the matchup, when you knew what was going to happen, and I said this, they did a piece on this on ESPN Countdown on Sunday, and it would be, you know, going through what we've and Lions fans have gone through historically, it would be so perfect. Your first ever playoff game in Ford Field, and the guy who couldn't get you, who tried very hard, he was great here, who couldn't get you that playoff game at Ford Field was going to come in and rip your heart out. And he went to the same high school as the guy who put the curse on the franchise. It would be just so Lion-esque, and oh my God, but it didn't happen. Amazing. Same old Lions went away.
And this was the locker room scene after that game.
Play next Sunday back here at home, guys.
Yeah!
So look, we got the winner of Tampa and Philly, which is tomorrow. We'll be here at 3:00 back at Ford Field, because you got fucking earned it. Dude, how electric was it out there? I'm telling you what, it doesn't get any better. It's everything you dream of and then more. All right, that's outstanding work. I got two game balls. All right, number one, listen, when you come in 3 years ago, like me and this guy did, and you had a vision and you start working together and you've got an idea how you want to build it and the type of players you're looking for and how you want to go top to bottom, offense, defense, special teams, and you're in fucking lockstep. You're in fucking lockstep. I'm telling you guys, it's a shitty business. It ain't always perfect, but we do a pretty good job.
Right.
But without this fucking guy right here, man, Brad Holmes. Great job.
I absolutely love every single person in this room, man. We were intentional on being about grit, all right, and earning it. I love everybody in here, man. We went through darkness and it shaped us, all right? It shaped us for this moment. I love y'all, man. Thank you so much.
Thank
appreciate
you so much.
It. Especially this time, man. Thank you, man.
Okay, I'll just say it like this, all right? Hey, you're good enough for Detroit, Jim.
Yeah.
And appreciate you guys more than you fucking know. I promise you that. I love you guys so fucking much. This is just the beginning, boys. This is just the fucking beginning. We got three more of these fuckers next week at home, at our place, against whoever the fuck wants to come in here. Let's go. Win on three, one, two, three. Win!
All right, so Jared Goff, you're good enough to be here. I mean, and boy, he has been.
He's been good enough.
Terrific.
Yeah, he has. I mean, if you're going to sit there and say he's better than Stafford, no. Matthew Stafford is still a better quarterback. I mean, he made some throws on Sunday that were ridiculous. But Jared Goff is good enough to get a team to a Super Bowl because he's done it before. Now, was that Ram team better than this one? Probably. They had Todd Gurley. You know, they were good. But he can do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I worry about their defense.
Sure. But, he's got weapons around him offensively. Yes. I mean, they've proven that they can run the football. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got good receivers. They can move that ball around. All of that is good. As long as they limit the turnovers against the Bucs, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. I think that's going to be key for sure.
Yeah.
And by and large, except for a couple of blips, you know, Goff, the Lions have done a good job of that. And so, you know, I'm hopeful that this role is going to continue.
Yeah, and then go to the NFC Championship game, whether it be here or San Francisco, and then Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. It would be fantastic. All right, what's been fantastic is your career. Here we are today, Stoney, 2024, mm-hmm. and this was Channel 7. This was the Sunday Sports Update show in 2001.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the 7 Sports Update. I'm Dave Llewellyn.
Hey, football season, NFL starts next week, baby.
We're ready.
Yes.
We'll see if the Lions are ready.
Yeah.
We got a lot of good stuff to talk about.
Yes, we
do.
We
got the hockey. Ken Holland is coming up tonight, the Red Wings general manager. A great pitched game at Fenway Park.
Mm-hmm.
But we should probably start with the Lions.
Yes.
This was cut down day today in the NFL, so they had to get rid of some guys. No real surprises there.
No, as far as the guys that they were cut, I thought maybe Jason Glenn, one of their draft picks. Hopefully he'll make the team as the practice squad.
But a
few years ago.
Oh, my God. Yeah, my hair is a little less gray, a little less poundage on.
A few more wrinkles.
Yes, exactly.
And the like.
That was so much fun. And Patrick McLaughlin and Ray J, and you guys decided, you know what? And Don Shane, you know.
We had a great group.
We did. And he'd be really good at this because I was just, you know, I was doing WDFN. And we started wearing sweaters.
Yeah.
Sunday Sports Update, of course, Wojo called the Sweater Update.
Yeah.
And it started in, I believe it was the 97 Michigan football season is when we started. And then I ceremoniously got dumped for the first time, but we won't get into why that happened. But then he brought me back. And then from being
contributor.
I was like a co-host.
Yeah,
come in, write
absolutely.
Highlights. It was great.
We had great times.
Yes.
It was fun and a lot of Lion losses during those years,
mm-hmm.
but I enjoyed it so very much. A lot has changed in the media business, in the television business. You mentioned you came here in 86, grew up in Philly,
mm-hmm.
One of the world's largest, biggest Bruce Springsteen fans, but a Philly sports fan as well.
Yes.
But you were working in D.C. and came here. Bernie Smilovitz hired you.
Yeah, I worked at the NBC TV station. Actually, the guy who got me in was the late Nick Charles.
Oh, yeah.
So I went in there and like logged a game when I was a junior in college. So I came back after going to UCLA for that summer, came back getting an internship because Nick goes, well, probably, but I'm not going to be here. They're letting me go. So I started off as an intern there, and then they hired me after I graduated as like a production assistant, actually a desk assistant in the newsroom. My first job was basically just answering phones in the newsroom. And before the big trade where they shipped him to New York, our local weatherman was Willard Scott. So part of my job was coming to the front desk and picking all the pastries that all the old ladies would leave for Willard and bring him to his office. So, yeah. And then I still would work in the sports department. And then they hired a guy named George Michael.
Yep.
Eventually became part of a network show called the George Michael Sports Machine. And I wanted to be on the air. And I did. We used to have our own score phone where people would call up for scores. And we had like 40 lines. You could see them, all the red dots, and I change them. I'm Michael Stone every 15, 20 minutes, except on the weekends where he'd say, you know what, go out, have a good time, come back on your way home from Georgetown. So there's people, there's gamblers who's got like $1,000 on Hawaii playing, and they're not getting any updates because I'm getting drunk or whatever in Georgetown.
Well, and at that time, that you couldn't get scores
the way there was no internet. There was nothing. That's all you did. So I wanted to get on the air, and it wasn't happening in Washington, so I did the stupid thing and quit before I had another job, worked in a bar for a little bit. And then Bernie was at, not Fox, but it's now Fox. It was the Metro Media station in Washington where Maury Povich was like the news anchor. Yeah. And Brian Williams was one of the reporters. And so Bernie came to Detroit and he asked me if I wanted to be his producer because I used to run the NBC feeds. And he said, you know, and we knew each other really well. And he knew I had all these connections if we needed to get video. You know, I knew how to do satellites and all that. So I said, what the hell? I got sucker punched St. Patrick's Day as a bar greeter. And I said, all right, I need the job. So we came out here. My first day of work was May of 1986.
All right, so
and I've been here ever since. Yeah. I thought I'd be here for a few years and do something. It's unbelievable.
A Detroit sports fan, mm-hmm. now through yeah. and through.
Yeah, when they play Philly, I root for Detroit. Now, Philly's my high B team. But,
sure, sure. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so from the television, though, and producing for Bernie, then WDFN, all sports radio,
well,
comes to
before
town.
Before that, I was living with two guys. We used to, yeah. you know, me, my friend Ken Droz, and Mitch Albom. And Mitch did radio on Wheels in the morning, so we decided to try to do a sports talk show on Sunday nights, the Sunday Sports Album. And the first show we ever did was in October, I guess, of 88, after the World Series. And I think Kirk Gibson and, like, Adrian Dantley were our first guests. And then the following week, if I'm not mistaken, right after the show, Mitch got a call from the Free Press that Darryl Rogers got fired. Wayne Fonts is going to take over. And I just remember that. And we used to do a show every Sunday. People seemed to like it. We'd go to, usually it was just at the studio, but once in a while we'd go on location to like E.G. Nick's. And then Don Cherry's. We'd go to Windsor and, yeah, and do a show from there. And then I was still at Channel 4. And being an avid sports fan of media, I could never understand why Detroit didn't have an all sports radio station. And lo and behold, I saw an ad basically, or somebody told me. So I got in contact with somebody and gave my tapes from there, and I got hired, but I got hired not for the job I eventually took. I got hired to do a show from 6 to 10 p.m. at WDFN with the Mega Man, Ike Griffin.
Ike.
And Rob Parker was doing afternoon drive with some guy named Lance McAllister, who ended up at the last minute staying and going to Cincinnati, wherever he went, I forget, Cincinnati, Chicago. So Lorna Gladstone, who ran the station, said, well, why don't you and Rob work with Rob? And we did this thing called The Odd Couple, and it was pretty successful. Then Rob decided, I want to go back to New York and be a writer. He left, and then Wojo came, and that became a very, as you know, very popular show for years. And then they decided, Clear Channel, the parent company, the day Obama got inaugurated. So January 14th or 15th in 2009, we got fired. And they fired like 2,000 people nationwide.
Yeah.
And they picked that day because they wanted to bury it in the news. But here, it didn't get buried because we were doing live shots for the 11 o'clock news. It was great. And then thankfully, I had a great agent, the late but great Mike Novak, who got me a guaranteed contract. So they had to pay me for the remaining 2.5 years. Which that's what made no sense. Wait a second. You're going to pay me for 2.5 years. Why are you firing me? Somebody else is going to be on that air. That was like either network programming, or I think they might have put Matt Shepard on for a while. Whatever. It just made no sense to me. So that's the way
corporate America works.
Well, it makes no sense.
Yeah,
even if it doesn't help them financially. So then I had a non-compete for a little bit, and then I got a job at 97.1, just filling in. Jay Towers leaves the morning show. They need somebody to take his place, so they put me with Bill McAllister and Sarah Fouracre. And we had a little run, and they decided that they wanted to do more sports. And they brought in my good friend Jamie Samuelson, and we did a show for a while. And then, as you know, unfortunately, Jamie got colon cancer and passed away at the age of 48, I believe. Then John Jansen took his place, so I'm still here.
It's been, in this business, mm-hmm. There's something to be said for being a survivor, and certainly you are through the ups and downs, and good on you on that, and good that you were able to fulfill that desire to be on the air, mm-hmm. Television.
It's always what I wanted to do. My main goal as a kid, when I realized at an early age I wasn't good enough to play, which is probably like third grade, I always wanted to do play-by-play. Yeah. I was a junk. I mean, I would tape games. I remember like on a little, it wasn't even cassette. It was before they had cassettes, little reel-to-reels, basically. The famous Jets-Colts Super Bowl. I'm doing play-by-play at like age, that would be six, like 11, doing all that stuff. And so I did get, and I did play-by-play in college, and I did get to do two Piston games when people got sick. So I did actually get my dream. But I never thought of doing sports talk, and it worked.
And
it was great.
And could you imagine, though, that you'd be able to make a career of it necessarily?
No. And thankfully, as we'll probably get to later, the business has changed. I consider myself, do I have talent? Sure, a little bit. But lucky, especially the time frame, because if I wanted to do what I ended up doing, like now and join, there are stations, even though the stations don't even want interns because they're afraid if the intern falls and they'll get sued or something. It's unbelievable the way the business has just gone to crap.
Well, that radio and television, big time changes. And
it's all of corporate America. It's not just radio and TV.
Right. But look at the technological shifts as well.
Yes.
And podcasts now.
Yeah.
You know, as well that, you know, weren't even in anybody's mind back in the day when you started and what we do.
Look at the technology. We used to go out with a crew on a story. You had a shooter. You had an audio guy. Sometimes you even had a light guy.
Yeah.
3-man crew. Then it became a 2-man band. Then it became a 1-man band. Now these guys are shooting them. If I was in television now, I have to learn how to shoot my.
Well, and a lot of it, can be
on the phone.
On the phone, because the cameras and the video and iPhones so good, for instance. So yes, technology has changed a lot. The competition that's out there, all the different platforms.
Oh, I know.
The revenue's not the same. The viewing audience and listening audience is not the same. I mean, these are realities of the business.
I'm so confused why a lot of advertisers still advertise on local news, because the numbers just are unbelievable. Radio, not the two radios who are in, the numbers for especially local stuff like we do is still really, really high. But for some reason, whether it's ego or not, that people want to be on television. But it shows most people aren't, less and less people are watching local news. A lot of it, the people are streaming it, but still.
Right. Well, there's still brand acknowledgement and association. Mm-hmm. And there's still, you still are reaching people and it can be impactful. But yes, things have changed an awful lot. The change for you that's coming after the Super Bowl, you're going to stay at the station for a couple of years.
But the Lions post game when, people are on vacation, I'll take over. I'll fill in. I do a Pistons podcast with good listenership on that right now called Restore the Floor. I think I might do something with the Tigers. I'm trying to do some more. Hopefully, if the sales department does their job, I'm still supposed to be able to do commercials, not live reads, obviously, but just record. And because we have so many stations in that building, before it was just 97.1. Now, because I'm not full time, I can you can hear me on other stations too. Hopefully,
well, and yours is a voice that people are familiar with, comfortable with and want to hear from.
Well,
and
so
there'll still be that opportunity in whatever form, for you to continue to, to display the passion that you have always had. And that's part of, you've kind of had a fan's approach always to the job that you've done, to the observations, the opinions that you've had. And I think that's resonated with so many people over the years.
Yeah, it has. I mean, as you're getting older, you're probably more realistic. I don't, call for firings as much as I used to, because you realize we have, don't have as much say as we kind of think we do. And you get to meet people and you feel bad. It's the worst. People say, what's the worst thing in your job? Besides getting up at 4:30 in the morning. The worst thing about my job is going on the air and telling people they should be fired. And that's when you like them. If you don't know them, who cares? I mean, that's, there's somebody like Mike Valeni. He doesn't, go and meet the player, which is fine. That's great. So it's easier for him because I think to, and I do it, but I kind of, he's a really good person, but.
Right. Well, sometimes.
Yeah.
They're in public roles.
Yes.
And they have to be
held
accountable. So they know that a certain amount of that goes with the territory, and especially, look at the way people are being paid in pro sports today, athletes and coaches.
I know.
Harbaugh's got a decision to make now. Does he stay at Michigan? Does he go back, to the NFL? He's going to have numerous suitors, I'm sure. What do you think happens there?
My gut says he goes, But I have no idea because nobody knows but him. I mean, the Chargers seems like a perfect fit. He's got the quarterback there. You know, allegedly his wife likes California. I don't know. It's
well, I would think though with the role that Michigan is on, and I believe Ward Manuel is going to do everything possible to keep him. And I don't know your feelings on the expanded playoff going forward, but with Michigan kind of on the roll they're on, I would argue that they cannot afford to let him leave because of what's at stake. In other words,
and especially the timing of it, because I thought there were, if he did leave, it would have been better to do it, you know, now, but then all of a sudden, boom, Saban goes. Because I had heard that DeBoer's people were very interested in Michigan in case Harbaugh left. Hmm. This is when he was in Washington. But, you know, and Fish used to be an assistant here. But, and look, if he does leave, they have to promote Sherrone Moore.
Right.
Unless something crazy happens, like, you know, Mike Tomlin says he wants to coach college football, which I don't think anybody who's been in the NFL in their right mind would want to coach college football.
Well, especially today.
Right, to deal with recruiting, transfer portal, and NIL and all that stuff.
Yeah. But I just think that where they're at, where they've gotten to, you need, if you're Michigan, you need to be in that 12-team playoff every year, right?
Well, they're pretty close. Yeah, I don't think.
I mean, it's as much as possible.
Especially with the new teams coming in.
Yeah.
Into the Big Ten, it's going to be tough because at least USC will probably get it together. I mean, look, Washington's, who knows how many. Right. Oregon's going to be really good. I think Ohio State, they're going to be, I hate them, but they're going to be really good
right,
this coming
right.
year.
But the point is.
They should be in the consideration.
Right. You've got it rolling. Right. And you need, with everything that's at stake, mm-hmm. you need to do everything possible to stay where you're yes. at in this new world of college football.
Absolutely. And if that means, hard to say, even lessening some requirements or, you know, getting your NIL up a little bit that you don't want to do, you're going to have to do it.
Yeah. Interesting times for sure for Michigan, but congratulations on the success there.
As a season ticket holder, I loved it.
Yeah,
it
let's hope the Spartans can.
I think it's a great hire. I think Smith is a great hire, and they've done really well through the portal. Getting the quarterback Childs is really good. It, you know, you won't probably see overnight success, but look, it's going to be Ohio State and Michigan, and maybe let's say USC or Oregon, Penn State. Michigan State, they can be or should be in top half every single year, except maybe the first year.
Well, this
Minnesota, Iowa, Purdue.
Right, Illinois, some of these schools are never going to win anything
Nothing.
In the new Big Ten.
Nothing, but they'll just take the money.
Yeah, right.
Which, you know, it pays for all the other sports.
Yeah. What do you think about USC, UCLA,
it's disgusting.
Washington?
I mean,
Oregon.
It's cool in a way. I mean, I can't wait next year. Well, Texas is a non-conference game, but I can't wait to sit in my seats.
That's scheduled.
Right. And see the USC, you know, the showgirls or whatever they call them with the sweaters and stuff coming in a big house. That's going to be cool for a dirty old man for me sitting in the end zone with my binoculars. No, seriously, though. It's going to be cool to see those schools come in every once in a while.
Because they never did.
Never.
I mean.
So that part is good. But if you think about it, especially the other sports.
Yeah.
I mean, does Michigan really, and Michigan State, do they really need to get on a plane and go to Eugene, Oregon to play softball?
Oh.
They don't, I mean, it's, right. I, well, football pays for everything, so if they can afford it, they will.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how all of this,
yeah.
All of this, you know, works itself out. But interesting times to be sure. All right, before we get out of here, we talked a little bit about the change mm-hmm. in media, certainly. Let's talk about what we hope will be changes with a couple of these other pro teams in town.
Mm-hmm.
You got the Pistons who won the other night.
Yeah.
Fourth win of the season. Go Pistons. A Tigers team that is struggling to find its way forward. And the Wings that, of the three, are certainly trending in a better way.
The Wings are the closest. I mean, as we speak today, granted the games – other teams have games in hand, but I think if the season ended today when we're taping, they'd be in the playoffs. But they have a tough stretch coming up. They're fun to watch because they really, you know, they just have to do better defensively. And in goal, thankfully, Alex Lyon, their third-string goalie, has really come out strong, and he's played very well. They're very easy to play against, though. I find that, you know, there's really no bite to them.
Right.
But offensively, they are fun as hell to watch. I think Lalonde's a good coach. I mean, people are starting to get a little, you know, fed up with the Iser plan because it's taking longer than people realize. Hey. But in hockey, as Ken Holland used to say, you got to have stars. And yeah, Patrick Kane was a star.
Right,
DeBrincat's really good, but I don't think he's a star. Larkin's really, really good. Star, no.
Right. He's not. I don't think he's a 1C.
No.
You know,
no.
He's a good player,
a really
and a 200 foot player.
Yeah.
And loves being a Red Wing, and you know,
and his
a great
game
leader.
And his game has stepped up immensely.
Yes. So yeah, it is about it is about talent, but also the will and the fight.
But in hockey, if you get in, you got a chance more than the other sports.
Right. Right.
The Tigers, because they're in the worst division in maybe in sports, they got a chance because Minnesota's trimming payroll. The White Sox, I don't know what they're doing. Cleveland is always going to be around. They were kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
I like some of the acquisitions the Tigers made. You know, the pitcher from Minnesota, you know, Medea, he'll be all right. If their young kids come through again, like if Green can stay healthy, if Torkelson, you know, he's on pace to get 40 home runs. If Javi Baez doesn't swing at pitches over the next room, I mean.
And if some of these pitchers that they have – invested so much in
Scooble,
terms of
I mean,
high
he's
draft.
Legit. Yes,
if some of them could finally stay healthy.
Yes, I mean Casey Mize. You know, it's either now or never, buddy.
Right.
But they have a chance because of the division they're in, and then who knows after that? The Pistons. If we see the rest of this season that Durin, who I think will be, and Ivy, I'm not sure, are legitimate, really good players to go along with Cunningham. Then there could be, you could sit there, okay, there's somewhat of a foundation. And I know Isaiah Stewart plays hard, but
they
have all this cap room, and the free agents aren't coming here.
Right.
So what they have to do is somehow make a trade. And if they can get, for somebody who's going to fill up the cap because there's a floor, if they can get a really good player through a trade, then maybe next year they can actually sniff the playoffs. But drafting has been so horrible.
It has, and I just don't know that I have the confidence.
No, I don't either.
That this ownership and this management team is going to be able to.
It's funny you bring up the ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So what he's done is he's alienated a fan base, but I don't think he's done it on purpose. He's done like we talked about before. He just has not hired the right person to run basketball.
Yeah.
He's certainly not cheap. I mean, when he took over. I remember that press conference with the Palace. I said, this guy's going to keep this team for 2 or 3 years, flip it, and make a lot of money. What does he do? He puts millions into making the Palace even nicer than it is.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, boom, he goes downtown. Now, I don't know if he got a cut. It was an ego thing why they did that. And that started. And then they, you know, Van Gundy didn't work. And, you know, this guy didn't work. And Dwayne Casey was coach of the year. He didn't work. Now he's paying. So the Gores is not cheap. And he really doesn't know a lot about basketball. So that's not the worst thing in the world that he kind of stays away and like lives in Beverly Hills. But just hire somebody who knows what they're doing. Everybody around the NBA thought Troy Weaver was legit. And he just, I think, became too archaic with, you know, point guards and big guys when the league is different. It's, you know, wings who can shoot.
Yeah, I just don't see him settling on, you know, who's part of the future. And then just the rotation and just some of the decisions from a coaching standpoint with utilization of players. It's just, I mean, my head spins at some point, and it's like, when is this going to possibly change? And I don't see it.
They're a mishmash is what they are.
All right, we'll wrap up with a couple of things.
Okay.
Number one, as you reflect on your time in this town covering sports, if I were to say to you, top two or three moments or experiences or, you know, things that you've covered, talked about, you know, what would they be?
Well, championships are always fun, obviously.
Yes.
So, you know, the Wings ending their drought, covering the Bad Boys. Actually, before they won, they were more fun to deal with, as you know, back in 88, more than once they became. Once teams become good, they become a-holes to a certain extent. Not completely. The Lions, you know, this year, being in that building on Sunday was incredible. Absolutely incredible. That and being in the stands at Michigan Stadium in 2021 when they finally beat Ohio State.
Yeah.
That was just cool as hell. As far as other stuff, I mean, doing the we used to do a radiothon for leukemia every year, which was a lot of fun. That was great. And you know, when I gave away my gave out my cell phone number on the air instead of the number of WDFN, that was a beaut. Uh-huh. I've done a lot of those ridiculous things, mispronounce people's names. All you know,
well, it just goes with the territory. Mm-hmm. Well, we've enjoyed it all. All right, so I mentioned earlier on, world's biggest Springsteen fan. Mm-hmm. So, where are you at in terms of number of Bruce Springsteen concerts that you have witnessed in person?
I believe it's 136, approximately.
Are there more in 2024?
I will be at the T-Mobile Arena on March the 22nd. It's playing Las Vegas. I'm doing, me and my college roommate, we started this last year. Well, actually, before COVID, we said, because he's a huge hockey fan, Rangers season ticket holder, so we're going to do a hockey trip every year. So the first year, he met me in Toronto. We did the Hall of Fame, and the Wings played the Leafs, and the Wings were horrible back then, but they won. Larkin scored in overtime. Then we had COVID. So last year, I said, hey, wow, let's do this, because Springsteen is. So we flew. We met in Vancouver. We saw the Canucks play the Bruins in Vancouver, which was cool as hell, and it was a horrible game. Vancouver was awful last year. Now they're pretty good.
Yeah.
But we did see a goalie score a goal, which the first time I ever saw in person. So that was cool. So the next day, we fly to Seattle, and we see the Kraken host the Maple Leafs. Toronto kills them. So I've seen two goals for the home teams in two games. And then Springsteen played that arena the next night. So this year, we are flying. I'm meeting him in L.A. on a Wednesday, the 20th. We're seeing the Kings. I think they play the Minnesota Wild. Then we're renting a car, driving to Vegas. On Thursday, it's the first day of the NCAA tournament, which in Vegas is nuts. Like our station, Valani's going to be out there doing the show. Anyway, so we'll watch basketball on Thursday. Friday is Springsteen. And then Saturday night, the Golden Knights. I forget who they play.
Wow, that's a great trip.
Yeah, so we're trying to do something like that every
year. That's a fan trip.
Yeah, I don't know how long Bruce is. I mean,
he's
73 years old right now. And he had a little health deal during the last tour. We postponed a lot of shows. But he's still incredible. To play 3 hours at that age.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there are some things that the Bruce idiots like myself don't like, because the set list doesn't change as much if you're going to go see a lot of shows. But it's more, the shows are great, but it's more for me about, you know, being there with my friends who we used to go when we were a lot younger. It's like reliving that stuff, reliving the glory days, to use a cliche from him. Yeah.
But you know what? Let it rock as long as it can.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, why
not? I mean, just like your career. You know, the love for Bruce, the passion for sports. I mean, you know, you're going to continue to find your voice and your place for your voice to be heard. And I, speaking for myself, but sports fans in this town are going to be very happy.
By the way, the people listening or watching this podcast might not know, I've told this story before, that one of my favorite Davy Lou stories was on the – actually, it was before they redid the course. We were playing Tam O'Shanter, and I shanked a chip shot and hit you right in the groin, I think.
Yeah, that was a memorable day.
You're like 45 degrees to my right.
Right.
I don't know how the law of physics could even hit a shot that bad.
Well, clearly I shouldn't have been there.
No, you should have known who you were playing with.
Well, yeah, you know, we were equally bad that day in so many things, but good that we had this opportunity to share and the association and the time that we had at Channel 7, very memorable and meaningful for me, for sure, and as are your contributions, you know, in this town.
Thank you very much. And the listeners, viewers, the way they've treated me and my family, it's been unbelievable. Walking through the halls of Ford Field the other day, hey, congratulations on your retirement, we're going to miss you. Yeah, whatever. You know, it's like,
It's
they'll
nice.
Find out the real deal.
It's nice to get the affirmation.
Yes,
I know. That you made an impact on people's lives and made a difference in the conversation all these years.
Yes.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
Good health to
you and your family. Thank you. You and yours as well.
And
thanks to everybody.
We'll stay in touch.
Yep.
Stoney, Mike Stone, 97.1 The Ticket, joining us on the Dave Llewellyn podcast today. Thanks to our producer, director, Josh Bowron, and to you for listening. As always, Stay safe. Be kind. We'll see you next time.